Hey, who wants to live longer? Go to superhumanradio.com today and listen to Superhuman Radio live at 1 p.m. Pacific weekday.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have an amazing, nothing short of amazing show planned for you today. During the first hour, we'll cover two different topics: how running and walking regulates appetite in women. Also, the health benefits of long, low-intensity workouts versus short, intense workouts. And then we will also cover aerobic exercise versus weight training for fat loss. This is going to be a great show, I promise you. And I always have to give credit and thanks to my assistant, Ginny Robards, for doing all the research for me and making me look so intelligent. I will be at the Arnold. Some of you have emailed me and asked me if my mishap at the gym yesterday means I'm not going. I will be there. I'll be the guy shuffling along in house slippers. For those of you who missed yesterday's show, a massive amount of weight fell during a freak accident at the gym and smashed toes on both of my feet. But like the trooper that I am, I would not miss the Arnold Classic this weekend. I will be in Columbus, Ohio. Look for me, the guy walking like a penguin. But I did finish my leg routine yesterday, even through all the pain. So think about that next time you're complaining why you can't get to the gym. Okay. I want to introduce Dr. Annette Larson-Mayer. She is with the University of Wyoming at Laramie. And we're going to be discussing how running and walking regulates appetite in women. How you doing, Dr. Larson?
I'm doing great.
I think that we need to open this discussion with something that you said off the air, which is intriguing because I never really gave it a lot of thought, and it's always the things that are right in front of you that you don't see. But whenever these discussions about exercise as it relates to health, fitness, longevity, performance are discussed, nothing is ever talked about in the area of appetite. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a great question. I mean, it's interesting because we talk so much about carbohydrates, fats, proteins, and benefits, and, you know, vitamins and minerals.
And timing. And let's face it, we also, you know, the new mantra is now, you know, nutrient timing. But let's face it, timing should have some relevance to the timing of appetite itself.
Right. Yes, absolutely. I think that's important, even in the context, too, of what you're consuming in the recovery or sort of post-exercise meal. And if you're not hungry and that's the time you need to get it in, what do you do? Or vice versa, if you eat, exercise, and then you stop and get a sweet roll to roll, you know, award yourself, then actually what are you doing? You know, are you really hungry?
Let me ask you a question, and this is kind of a non sequitur to the discussion that mm-hmm. we're going to be talking about the research, but to this discussion, do you think that appetite, the relative hunger or satiety, plays any role in nutrient partitioning? If we're forcing a meal down when we're not hungry, is it doing something different than when we're starving?
I think it's a great question. I don't actually have anything really from the research or anything to say too much about that. Other than you know that liquids are easier to consume during that time period when you're not hungry.
Right.
So I don't know. Great question.
Let's talk about the research. So your group looked at the different effects of running versus walking in women, and this was specifically in women because obviously the hormonal milieu in women is a bit different than in men, and how it affects appetite. How was the study designed?
So what we did, and I guess just to preface this a little bit, most of the research has been done in men. There's very few studies that have been done in women. So we wanted to look at women, and then we wanted to look at people who are either walking or running. So it was basically two groups compared to a sedentary control. And the walkers were, regular walkers, the runners were trained in running. And just sort of by default, the runners were more aerobically fit, so they had a higher VO2 max test.
Right.
So what we did was we had 9 female runners and 10 female walkers, and they completed a 60-minute bout of either running, if they were runners or walkers, at 70% of VO2 max. So that's how we controlled intensity. And then they completed a 60-minute rest, and that was done in random order. And then we inserted an IV and took blood before the exercise at baseline and then after exercise for 2 hours. And then we fed, well, actually every 30 minutes for 2 hours. And then we gave them a free choice buffet that just had a variety of different foods with a variety of different macronutrients that they consumed.
Okay, wait, now I have a question, so.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
sure.
So both groups were required to either run or walk.
Right.
At a pace equivalent to 70% of their VO2 max.
Yes.
I guess my question is, wouldn't that cause both groups, while one may be walking very quickly and the other may be running very slowly, wouldn't that cause both groups to experience the same degree of energy expenditure and or perceived levels of exhaustion?
Well, actually, so the runners were running and the walkers were walking.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And so if the runners had a higher VO2 max, so actually what it does, and interestingly, you're getting into the problem with this type of research, is how do you set this up?
Yes.
So it's the same level of intensity for both of them, you know, basically
yes.
rate of perceived exertion.
Yes,
but
because the runners were in better condition. So for them
yeah.
to receive, the walkers probably hit 70% really easy. The runners had to run to get to 70%.
Right.
I see.
And so the calories that are expended, the runners basically expended, I think, on average 680, so just under 700 calories an hour of running, whereas the walkers, it was about 520 calories. And the walkers also weighed a little bit more and had higher percent body fat as well. So you set it up, no matter how you design your experiment, you're going into it with something that can't be
yeah.
kept exactly the same. So other investigators have had people either do the same absolute intensity, and then you get into the trouble where it's easier for some people, so it's more intense than the intensity changes or the individuals, or just had them burn a certain amount of calories, and we know that that's a shorter time the more fit you are.
Right.
So no matter what, that's what happens. But we figured that people would naturally, if you're going to go to the gym, you're going to usually try and keep it within a certain intensity. So that's why we set it up to relative intensity.
And then obviously the amount of body fat that a person carries versus lean body mass will also affect both their level of perceived exhaustion, the strenuousness of the exercise, and the calories burned as well. Because if someone is carrying, let's say, 40% body fat versus a person who's carrying 20% body fat at the same weight, their energy expenditure is going to be dramatically different, is it not?
Yes. Yeah.
So
definitely.
How do you, so I guess you have to, do you adjust for this? Is there formulary that you use to adjust for these kind of things in order to kind of make the playing field as even as possible?
We definitely try and match people. So in this particular study, we just matched them for age. And we couldn't match them for anything else because the walkers tended to, they were just not as small as, you know, runners tend to be small little
yeah.
people for
yeah.
the most part. And then you adjust for that in your models if you can. In smaller studies, it's hard to adjust. But in larger studies, if you can get more people to do it, then you adjust for all the variables. And then, you know, hopefully that says something. But, you know, it does make, I think it confounds the results between, you know, what studies, what you find. And
yeah.
then you throw men and women in there, and then it even changes.
Everything changes. Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this. I want to take a quick commercial break. And when we
okay.
come back, I want to get into the results of the study. I want to talk about hormonal responses to these different modalities of exercise. We're talking today with Dr. Annette Larson-Mayer from the University of Wyoming at Laramie. We're talking about the hormonal response in women to running versus walking and how it affects appetite. An important discussion for women out there who are looking to cut body fat and maybe dieting very, very strictly at the same time. You don't want to do something that's going to make your dieting even more arduous. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrientC.com. That's AltrientC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltrientC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C. 21st century vitamin C.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre-, intra-, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechanogrowth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free, capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Ladies, it's time to improve your sex drive with a female libido supplement patch. The patch contains both DHEA and oxytocin hormones, revving up your passionate side and putting you in a relaxing, loving mood. The continuous 8-hour time-release delivery assures that you are ready for that planned or unexpected occasion. Don't wait to enhance your sex drive. Go to superhumanradio.com and click on the banner ad. That's superhumanradio.com and click on the banner ad.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Okay, are you ready?
Operator.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Annette Larson-Meyer from the University of Wyoming at Laramie. How do you like the way I keep changing your last name? I went from Mayer to Meyer. And I'm going to try something else in the next segment. So, I'm going to work with this until something sticks. How's that sound? Anyway, and we're talking about how running versus walking affects appetite in women. And this is an important discussion because women, more so than men, don't like appetite. Men love appetite. You know, we work, we train hard, we want to build muscle. There's an old saying, you got to eat big to get big. But women, on the other hand, when weight loss and fat loss is the goal, quite often they say things like, I can't lose any weight. I'm just not going to eat anymore. Well, guess what? Your appetite will make you break that promise. And obviously the type of exercise that you do plays a large role in what type of appetite you have. So, okay, so the two groups, we understand how they each trained. How long did they do this for? Was this one acute bout, or did they do this over the course of weeks, or?
No, this wasn't a training study. It was just looking at one acute bout, and they were required to be people who regularly did these activities when they came into the study.
Okay. Did you find, before we get into the hormonal results, did you find any perceived attitudes in women that one was better than the other for fat loss because of something they heard or maybe their own instincts?
Yeah, no, we didn't ask them that at all. Because they sort of fell into those two groups anyway based on what they were already doing.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. If they thought running was better, they're not going to go walk. So, okay, so what hormones did you look at in response to the exercise modalities?
So we looked at three appetite-regulating hormones that are made by the gut. One is ghrelin. It's a really interesting peptide. It is secreted by these specialized cells in the stomach, and it's the only known orexigenic peptide, or basically appetite-stimulating or hunger hormone.
Right.
The other two that we looked at were PYY, peptide-YY, and GLP-1.
GLP-1, there you go.
And, yep, those are the satiety hormones that are made a little bit lower in the gut, in the intestines.
Right, right. Not what about cholecystokinin? That didn't play into that, or is that an upstream to one, a downstream to of one of these?
Though that is thought to be more of a short-term immediate regulator, and these are thought to be more intermediate. And then you have something like leptin that's made by the fat cells that are more long-term. But studies haven't really shown. The couple of studies that looked at CCK didn't seem to show that it really had a major impact. But it doesn't mean that it is not involved, and I guess I just wanted to say one thing about our work and just a couple of other people is that we've attempted to sort of look at a variety of different hormones at the same time because they may work together. One might suppress another one, but there's tons of studies out there where they just looked at one single peptide like ghrelin.
Right.
I don't know how you can look at ghrelin by itself without also looking at, you know, some of the appetite suppressors.
Yeah. And obviously GLP-1 is all the rage now within bariatric clinics. They have, I want to say something, it sounds like Actoza, but I don't think it's Actoza, but they have a Penject now of GLP-1, a long-acting version of GLP-1. So that is thought to have a significant effect on satiety. And we all know about ghrelin. Anybody who uses any of the GHRPs, we know that after a good shot of 250 micrograms of a GHRP-2 or 6, I don't know about you, but I eat my fingers if I'm not careful. So, you know, these are definitely good hormones to look at as indicators. Okay, so what did you find, let's say, in the walking group?
Well, I guess, you know, first of all, if I just kind of tell you what happened starting with the food intake, because that
was
really
that's right, because they had an ad libitum approach. They were able to walk up to a buffet table and eat whatever they want, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Okay.
Yeah, and actually the way that we did it was we arranged everything, a variety of different foods around where they ate. So it wasn't like you got up and went through a buffet, but it's sort of the same thing. We call it a free choice meal because one of the things that happens is in men in particular, when you feed them, no matter what the condition is, they will always overeat. And you always want to try and not create that overeating situation, but, you know, it's really hard to do in an experimental setting. But basically what happened was the walkers, they ate almost the same amount whether they rested or whether they walked, and they ended up being in positive energy balance after walking. It was only about 40 calories compared to about 300 calories positive energy balance.
Okay.
When they rested. But what happened to the runners is they were also in similar positive energy balance after they rested, about 300 calories. But after they ran, they were in negative energy balance. So basically, they ate less than what they expended in that ad libitum meal. And it was about 200 calories less. The other interesting thing is we did look at the macronutrients that they were selecting, and the walkers tended to eat more fat after they exercised. There was no difference in what the runners selected, and We were somewhat surprised. We thought maybe the runners might choose a little bit more carbohydrate food since they
right.
probably utilize more glycogen. But we didn't find that. But it was really interesting. It wasn't, you know, just given the fact that the walkers chose a little bit more fat. And it wasn't a lot. It was maybe 5 grams. But then you think about that adding up, if that is truly what happens over the course of the day.
So compared to their pre-exercise meal, they ate more fat post-exercise. But the runners, compared to their pre-exercise meal, they tended to eat exactly the same way that they did pre-exercise. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I guess it was compared to the condition where they didn't exercise,
okay.
where they just rested
gotcha,
for an hour.
Gotcha. Okay,
yeah.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so
yep.
when you – and so now that begs the question, what hormonal response did running have where they didn't have such a great appetite that they ate themselves back into a positive energy balance?
What – I think the biggest change – and when you model these statistically, it's always hard to give – simple bottom of the line, but I think the real simple thing is that ghrelin went up, which we were really surprised. You got a greater ghrelin response when you ran compared to when you rested, and we didn't see that same increase in ghrelin either with walking, but that happened at the same time or paralleled with an increase in PYY.
Uh-huh.
In fact, if you look at the papers, the PYY curve after running compared to the resting condition is just so nice. It was a nice abrupt rise. The walkers seemed to get a rise in PYY, but it fell relatively quickly.
Uh-huh.
And then remember, we didn't give the meal until 120 minutes after they exercised. So maybe we would have found something a little bit different if we had offered the meal to everybody, you know, immediately after exercise. Maybe they wouldn't have consumed as much. But if you waited 2 hours, there was also something interesting that occurred with GLP-1. It was kind of a greater dip in GLP-1 a little bit further out. Only
in the runners? Really?
Yes.
So it's almost like, and that seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, it does. It does seem a little bit different, but I think, you know, the next step that we want to do, I mentioned the comment, was looking at all these hormones independently is really hard. You know, what really overrides what? And if you have a high amount of PYY and ghrelin also goes up, then, you know, our work would really suggest that PYY is sort of overriding the hunger
right.
signal coming from ghrelin.
But see, one of the things that I was thinking about, and obviously I could be really far off base about this, but when we talk about getting back to the perceived level of exhaustion or the perceived level of a workload, both people trying to reach 70% of their VO2 max, one because of their lack of conditioning, having an easier time getting it done walking, and the other one because of their higher conditioning having to run to do that. And I agree with you. That kind of creates an even playing field, in my humble opinion, and I'm mm-hmm. obviously not well-educated. But what question I keep asking myself is, what role do stress hormones play on the regulation of satiety? Only because if cortisol goes up higher, let's say, or some other, you know, glycogen liberating, like glucagon, goes up in the runners versus the walkers, and blood sugar levels are maintained better in the runners as a result,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't that play a role on satiety and hunger as well?
You have everything that you just mentioned, and another very interesting metabolite, almost said hormone, that's been linked to appetite in some older research is lactate as
yeah,
well.
Right.
And
that's because it's an alternate substrate. The body
yeah.
can use it. And in fact, there is some research that says the brain prefers it. And let's face it, the brain is the master regulator. It's calling the shots as far as hunger goes because it's protecting itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all these hormones work through the appetite-regulating hormones in the brain. At least that's the hypothesis. And, you know, based on some animal research, we think that that's how they operate. So there's just so much we don't know, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And then the final thing is also body temperature as well. How does that have
thermogenesis?
An impact?
Yes, yes. I didn't even think about that. Did you look at body temperature at all?
So we didn't. We tried to, in our lab, we tried to control the setting where, you know, the lab is at the same temperature.
Mm-hmm.
In future experiments, we'd love to give the little pill where, you know, you swallow it basically and it will give some signals and let you know what your internal body temperature is. But there have been some studies, and, you know, if we just talk about mode of exercise, looking at swimming, and swimming is thought to increase appetite and food intake more so, and it's both anecdotally, I know I experienced
right.
that myself, but a couple of experiments showing that, but then the question is it really, because when you're swimming in water, it's usually a little bit colder, and maybe that why swimming is doing that is just the change in
internal right.
temperature.
Yeah, yeah, that could be the case. That's interesting. And again, the lactate question is a really good one too, because if the runners experience an increase in lactate production, and that is kind of satisfying the brain and other organ systems that are demanding energy, and they can use that as a substrate, it says, well, you know what, we're really not in trouble. We don't have to eat that much afterwards. But in the absence of lactate development in the walkers, their body says, you know, we need to refuel. That's really interesting. I didn't even think about lactate, but you're right. That's amazing. So obviously, the next step for your group is to expand upon this research, obviously, and start looking at these questions in the near future. We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about, is there any prescription that comes from this at this point in time for women out there who want to experience a lowered appetite and want to be using a modality of exercise that will help them with that? We're talking with Dr. Annette Lawson Mayer. See, I went back to Mayer there. I have no business doing this show.
I think you're supposed to pronounce it Mayer.
Because it's two E's.
I know.
Yeah, okay.
We don't in the U.S., but you can call it whatever you want.
Dr. Annette Lawson Mayer and at the University of Wyoming at Laramie, we're talking about the difference between running and walking in women and its effect on appetite. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Wanna hear it before, say no. Let me check my itinerary.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RGCell Super Stem Cell Support. RGCell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RGCell banner ad today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. 1-800-246-3636. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
New from Rob Ragish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes The Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today. Guys and gals, are you over 30 with a poor sex drive, gaining unwanted fat, or feel weak or tired? You may be suffering from hormone imbalances that can be treated affordably by physician-supervised hormone therapy. Why wait to feel like you again? Call Core Medical Group now to schedule your hormone check and save $100 when you mention Superhuman Radio. Call 617-869-7961. That's 617-869-7961. Physical and medical history required prior to therapy. Some restrictions apply. Call for details, 617-869-7961. Feel like you again.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
The discussion will continue during the second hour of the show today when we cover two topics. That is the health benefits of long, low-intensity workouts versus short-intense workouts and aerobic exercise versus weight training for fat loss. Which is the best? Right now we're talking with Dr. Annette Larson-Mayer from the University of Wyoming at Laramie about the effects of running versus walking on hunger in women. Is there a prescription that we can give people? Should women be striving to run? Obviously, hunger is just part of the issue when a woman is trying to lose body fat.
Right, exactly. I think you said it in the beginning when you were talking about individual differences, but I wanted to share with you one study that I think is really interesting and sort of sets the stage between men and women. And it was a study that was done by Joe Donnelly's group. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they had a large group of men and women follow 16-week supervised aerobic exercise program. And basically, I think it varied between around 3 to 5 days per week. And it was shorter, 20 to 45 minutes at about the same intensity we did, 60 to 70% of VO2 max. But they didn't ask people to intentionally restrict their calories. They just had them eat ad libitum. And the men lost an average of 5 kilograms just by increasing exercise, no change or no intentional change in their food.
Right.
Whereas the women either didn't change or had a slight increase in their body weight. So what that means is that the women had to eat back the calories that they had just exercised with food.
Mm-hmm.
And so women tend to, it's thought that women cannot, or for the most part on average, lose weight or will not lose weight if you just only add exercise because somehow they're better able to compensate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's actually thought that might be because as women, we bear children,
there you go.
You know, studies in animals, et cetera, so that we don't want to be in that negative energy balance. But if you intensely want to lose weight, then what you need to do is just be, I guess, conscious of what you actually are exercising. And I think people don't seem to, or people think in general that they burn more calories than they do. They sort of have an average of an idea about what your workout, what you're actually burning, and then not, you know, don't feel free to reward yourself and stop at Starbucks and get a Frappuccino because you can easily replace the calories in that one item that you just expended. But to have a healthy snack available afterwards and just consume that and sort of, I guess, be, you know, conscious about what you are consuming afterwards.
Well, and one of the things I find with women, and we've talked about this, you know, over the course of the past, I don't know how many years now, from time to time, is that there is another, when looking at the effects of a particular exercise modality on appetite,
mm-hmm.
The thing that women need to understand also is that if you attempt to starve yourself, because women are designed to bear children and they're genetically through you know, evolutionary pressures, they're genetically designed to respond to the environment in this way. When women eat less, they tend to not lose weight, regardless of how heroic the exercise efforts are. And, mm-hmm. and you know, and we've done shows on you know, a fed state response to fat loss years ago, and one of the things that I find with women is there's a very, very fine line for a woman to putting herself in that position where she's just not eating enough. And this is counterintuitive. You talk to women about this, they go, how could that be? If I want to lose weight, I have to eat less. Well, yes, you have to eat less than maybe you're eating now. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to, if once you get into that starvation mode, you stop losing weight entirely. The metabolic process slows down. The body starts to conserve and protect. And if anything, there seems to be an indication that the repartitioning effect is the body goes, you know, we have to turn everything into fat because we don't know when we're going to get a meal again. So, you know, while hunger is an important discussion, this is why early in the show I said, I wonder if your level of hunger and satiety plays a role in what your body does with that food in the way of partitioning. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an interesting discussion in and of itself as well.
It is. It definitely is. And I'm very glad that you said that because, you know, we never want a woman to get the idea, based on what I just said, that, oh, that means I shouldn't eat after I went to the gym at all.
Yeah.
I should run and then
do the HCG-esque type 600 calories a day. I'll lose weight that way. No, you'll lose a lot of metabolic currency. You'll lose a lot of muscle. Because the body looks at muscle as being, optional, you know. It's going to conserve body fat in case you get pregnant soon. So.
Right, yeah. Right. And then even back to thinking about the individual differences, you know, for the most part, men and women respond this way, but not everyone. You know, there's plenty of women who will, you know, just lose weight just like the men. And then there are those men who go to the gym and the same thing. They just cannot lose the weight when they just exercise. So thinking of, you know, individual differences, family genetics, what your preferences for food afterwards, and just making sure that you're making healthy choices afterwards is important as well. And not starving.
Right, yeah. No. But when women eat more frequently, You take your calories and divide them up across five meals. When you eat more frequently, it takes about 2 weeks for this effect to occur. We've talked about it on the show in the past. We've had women who followed it and came on the show and said, I can't believe it. I'm eating more. The people at work say, I can't believe you're eating again, but yet I'm losing body fat. It's ridiculous. When women take that target caloric number, mm-hmm. that energy intake number, and cut it up over five meals a day, the body is constantly being fed. The body, you know, for lack of better terms, goes, you know what? We're in an environment of abundance. You know, we really don't need all this body fat right now. And something magical happens. And when you combine that with the right kind of exercise, you just start losing body fat effortlessly. The problem is, obviously, because of lifestyle and other conditions that get in the way, you know, eating five times a day, most people go, I just can't eat five times a day. Well, you really can if you really want to, but it's difficult. It takes some planning. It takes some planning the night before. It takes some planning on Sundays, preparing all of your food and putting it in portion control bags so you can just grab things and run. But when you start eating your calories over the course of numerous meals, the body comes out of that starvation mode and goes, we're in a world of abundance and we just don't need all this body fat. And it starts to happen. But getting women to trust that and try it for 2 weeks is really, I mean, harder than anything else in the world, because women are convinced to lose weight, you must eat less. So it's really interesting. What about, you mentioned something before about a little pill that can be taken that monitors body temperature?
Yeah, it's like it's a core temperature pill. It's just a device.
And, oh, it's a device. Okay.
Yeah, it's for it's research setting, and it just you consume it as it goes through the GI tract. I don't actually even know what mechanism it works on, but it has a little sensor that it will signal to, and then it'll give you the body temperature through out of the course the whole time the pill is through the GI tract.
That's really cool.
We don't have to do rectal temperatures because, you know, you lose participants that way.
I don't know. You may gain a couple. Did you look at what stage of menopause these women were in the group, the 9 and the 10? Did we even look at that?
So all these women were younger. I think that the average age was around 23 in both groups. And they were premenopausal. And then I am glad you mentioned that because I didn't say earlier, but we control for them by having them in the follicular phase of their menstrual cycle.
Interesting.
And we know that's such an important variable that's also hard to look at because in the luteal phase, when progesterone is spiked too by the corpus luteum, it's a thermogenic hormone, so increases both energy expenditure and it increases food intake. So in most women, or in women that don't have a weight issue, you know, they probably balance out, but there's always those women who think that that period of time that they eat more, so maybe there's sort of an imbalance of what progesterone does, but we have to control for that. You can see that in our resting metabolic measurements. You can measure it and see somewhere between 50 to 200 calories higher in the luteal phase, probably due to progesterone.
Okay, so using that information, this is intriguing to me. So using that information, if a woman wanted to approach her weight loss, her fat loss, in a phasic approach, using her menstrual cycle so that there are periods of time where she would be, let's say, in a more optimal position to regulate hunger and maybe influence fat loss, which phase of the cycle do you think that would be?
That's actually a really interesting question, and one I'm not sure I will completely be able to address, but we always control for menstrual cycle just because we know that and you have to. And had searched early when we started to see if they knew anything about whether the, you know, ghrelin, PYY, and GLP were dependent on the phase of the menstrual cycle. And I think we found one paper, and actually off the top of my head, I don't even remember what hormone it was, that suggested that it basically probably was different follicular versus luteal. And so the information really isn't out there. It's kind of hard to study, but you're actually kind of giving me an idea. It would be really interesting to see how the menstrual cycle influences those hormones relative to the other things that we know are occurring, like slight increases in metabolic rate. But if you're going to, if it was the luteal phase and a woman actually ate more than the increase in her metabolic rate, then that certainly wouldn't be the time. But, you know,
don't forget, if you could like do this same study, but with these women, four different times to look at the different phases that they're in and how it influences these hormones. That would be cool. And then the other thing to consider is this. Both progesterone and estrogen play a role in blood sugar levels being stable and fluctuating. You look at women who, right before their period, they start having sleeplessness. They wake up in the middle of the night with what is clearly periods of hypoglycemia. We know that hot flashes are, or flushes, depending on which paper you read, they are related to an imbalance in estrogen and progesterone. We know from bodybuilders and power lifters and those of us who experimented with anabolic steroids that if you use drugs like progestin-based drugs like trenbolone, they elicit powerful hypoglycemic effects. They clear the bloodstream. You wake up in pools of sweat in the middle of the night, heart pounding. This is classic hypoglycemia. So we know that these hormones not only play a role perhaps in the regulation of satiety and hunger, but they also and it could be why play a role in glucose metabolism and mediation. So it gets even more and more complex as you dig into this. It really is cool.
It does.
We have to take our last commercial break, and when we come back, we will wrap it up. We're talking with Dr. Annette Larson-Mayer from the University of Wyoming at Laramie about the effects of running versus walking on hunger, purely on hunger. That's what we're talking about here. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
ich hab was vergessen, wie ich mag, wie du bist. Kenn ich schon, seitdem ich klein war, wir hingen immer zusammen. Damals waren zwei Wochen Ferien ohne dich und zu lang. Hab als Kind jeden Tag in deiner Straße stehen.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrian C. Altrian C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrian delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrianC.com. That's AltrianC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltrianC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrian C. 21st century vitamin C.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rubbed Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustane RX, Eco. Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Ladies, it's time to improve your sex drive with the Female Libido Supplement Patch. The patch contains both DHEA and oxytocin hormones, revving up your passionate side and putting you in a relaxing, loving mood. The continuous 8-hour time-release delivery assures that you are ready for that planned or unexpected occasion. Don't wait to enhance your sex drive. Go to superhumanradio.com and click on the banner ad. That's superhumanradio.com and click on the banner ad.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest protein bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Yo, give me something to dance to.
Welcome back. I will not be doing any dancing at the after party after the Arnold Classic in Columbus this weekend. I was going to post pictures of my feet on Facebook. I thought that somebody may be actually eating while browsing Facebook and be forced to projectile vomit. So needless to say, my feet are in bad shape. But you know what? That's what happens when you're an idiot. We're talking with Dr. Annette Larson-Mayer from the University of Wyoming at Laramie. You want to hear something really cool, Dr. Mayer? I have the ability to see where people listen to the show live. And every time there's like someplace really unique that someone is listening, I always like mention it. And we have a couple listeners off the coast of Madagascar. We've actually got to know them, Dominique Lest and Paul Baker. They live on the island of Mauritius. We have somebody listening to the show today on the west coast of Cameroon in Africa. That is so cool. I know. That is. I got to tell you, I'm so glad I got away from Clear Channel and set up our own internet radio station, because we reach people all over the world now, and hopefully we're doing some good. Okay, so let's summarize. What do you hope people take away from this research that your group has published?
As far as thinking about the big picture, I think that exercise intensity as well as the mode needs to be considered, you know, when we're making governmental recommendations, and that individuals also consider that exercise in and of itself is not going to automatically result in weight loss. And then also for those people who are training really, really hard, it's almost like the opposite effect.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that higher intensity training is suppressing the appetite and they're not able to eat enough back to promote the muscle gain they want, or, you know, to gain the benefits. So that we maybe just think about appetite and think a little bit more about what we're consuming, what we're doing, and if the results that people have, if I can keep that just general, whether the results that they want are weight loss and it's not occurring, that maybe there's changes in food intake that have occurred as well.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? And, you know, we're higher level humans we're higher level species, mammals. And, you know, if we have the ability to stop and think and analyze and ask why that is. And, you know, the same thing with expending a lot of calories during heavy training, and how can we override some of the signals that may be there from hormones.
When the body, what I've learned from doing this show over the past 8 years now, from talking with learned professionals like yourself, when I connect the dots in my little head, I realize that the body is so perfect, and it has a mission. That
mm-hmm.
mission is to procreate and then to die. And everything
mm-hmm.
else is secondary to that. And one of the things that's not a mission of this body is to be a 275-pound, 1% body fat, ripped-to-shreds athlete. And the body does everything it can not to take on that amount of real estate, because the body thinks, well, there's famine in our future, there's environmental conditions that can challenge us that will hurt our ability to procreate and die. And so, you know, I look at things like, well, we have myostatin. Why do we have myostatin? Because at one point in our evolutionary process, we must have grown uncontrollable muscle, and that caused problems because we couldn't feed the muscle. And as a result, that caused the species a challenge. So the body, through evolution, designed myostatin as a negative regulator of muscle growth. We don't have any positive regulators of muscle growth per se, other than, you know, the effects of mTOR and so on. They are not as strong as myostatin is at suppressing muscle. Otherwise, we would be able to overcome them and just grow ridiculous amount of muscle. And we see this in myostatin null mice and myostatin null bulls and dogs and even humans now that we're seeing. So the reason this is the long way around this is, it sounds to me like when the body does something that has the potential to increase its responsibility, its metabolic responsibility, and that is muscle, it does something in concert to downregulate that. That's just my own, you know, critical thinking at work here, but that would in a, you know, very, very feeble attempt, speak to why when you do something that has the potential to upregulate the compensatory response to exercise, that the body downregulates appetite at the same time.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. The myostatin research is really interesting. And, you know, on top of that, for the weight loss area, is just thinking about our artificial environment, if you might have that, and that we are really interested in these hormones, but we're also really interested in, you know, the hormones might change in one direction, but they don't go along with what people are really eating, and that maybe because they're rewarding themselves, or we're in this environment mm-hmm. where, well, I'm not really hungry, but I'm craving something I just saw on TV.
Yes.
And so we sort of also override our signals in our environment right now, particularly when it comes to, you know, trying to lose weight or, you know, gaining weight or... So that's another important consideration as well. But I completely agree with you. Our bodies are smart.
Yeah. so much smarter than we are. And my, part of my frustration in where we are today in this health debacle is that we think we can manipulate nature. We think that we are smarter because we have these brains, that we can figure things out, that we can somehow trick nature. And we can't. Whenever we do something to trick nature, it tricks us back because it's perfect. It's already thought five steps ahead of us. You know, we did a show several months ago that we talked about that when people go get liposuction, you know what the body does? The body builds more visceral fat. It says, you know what? I'm going to put the fat where you can't get it now. And mm-hmm. and so it's like, wait a minute. You didn't get rid of the fat. You just told the body you need to put it someplace where I can get this cannula into. I mean,
yeah,
think
exactly.
about that. How cool that is. I mean, that's so cool.
Yep.
So,
and fat is more dangerous, as you know. I mean, dangerous, quote, you know, related to increasing risk for cardiovascular disease and... Yeah.
Yeah. So, crazy. You know what? We have to stop trying to fool the body, and we have to start just reading the body like your work is doing right now, so that we can better understand what the body wants us to do instead of what we want our body to do. And when we get that down pat, things will change. So is there another study in the works already?
We don't have a study going on right now. We have some ideas, actually a grant that we've applied for. We're really interested in mode and then interested in intensity on top of that. So if you match the same amount of, say, calories that are burned doing a lower intensity versus high intensity in attempt to make time the same, and you do that, of course, by doing some intervals, not real intense intervals, but intervals with some lower, high, low to burn the same amount of calories as over the same amount of time as a lower level exercise. And then interested in swimming as well. So that's what we're attempting to do next.
The guest that's coming on next is Dr. Bernard Duvivier. He's with the Maastricht University in the Netherlands, and that's what we're going to be talking about, long, low-intensity exercise short, intense workouts, and which ones are better when health is the objective. Obviously, the other thing that people need to do is you need to choose what your endpoint is. If you're looking strictly at performance, you may have to do one thing and sacrifice some health benefits. If you're looking at health, you have to do something else and maybe sacrifice performance benefits. And if you're looking exclusively at fat loss, you may have to sacrifice lots of things at the same time. But that's the other thing that complicates this. What is the endpoint? And everybody wants. They want to be fit, they want to be healthy, they want to be lean, and they want to be strong. And sometimes you can't be all of those things 100%. Something has to give.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. And there's such a small percent of us that really are going to be in that elite category. You have to train hard, and your ultimate goal is performance. Of course, my goal for them is also performance and keeping their health, but that's such a small group. Most of us really just need to be concerned about the health benefits.
You don't become concerned about your health benefits until you're about 50. Like me, I'm 54 years old. Now it's more important to live long than to just exclusively be strong. You know, I was very reckless in past years using lots of different very, very high doses of androgens and stuff. Because all I want to do is be strong. That's all I wanted. And now I'm at that point where, you know what? I think that living longer is more important. So I think that these desires and objectives change as we age. Listen, I want to thank you so much for taking time to come on the show today.
Thank you. This has been very enjoyable.
Yes, and I hope you'll come back when you have more research, okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, we will continue with this discussion. And hopefully learn some more. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Save money and gain performance and health benefits with Whey Natural USA. They are overstocked and having a blowout sale on 2.5-pound jugs of grass-fed whey. This awesome product comes from Amish-fed cows inside the USA. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite method and comes with only 3 ingredients, grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Save big. Just click the Whey Natural USA banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Get a free sample plus a 15% discount with free shipping coupon product for the first 100 customers. Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Guys and gals, are you over 30 with a poor sex drive, gaining unwanted fat, or feel weak or tired? You may be suffering from hormone imbalances that can be treated affordably by physician-supervised hormone therapy. Why wait to feel like you again? Call Core Medical Group now to schedule your hormone check and save $100 when you mention Superhuman Radio. Call 617-869-7961. That's 617-869-7961. Physical and medical history required prior to therapy. Some restrictions apply. Call for details, 617-869-7961. Feel like you again.
Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get vengeance.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio.
Cold and soaking wet, came to hear his favorite DJ play a set.
Okay. What possesses greater health benefits? Long, low-intensity workouts or short, intense workouts? That's the discussion now with Dr. Bernard Duvivier with the Maastricht University in Netherlands. How are you, Dr. Duvivier?
I'm good, thank you. First of all, I'm a last year medical student, so I'm still 1 year, and I will be a doctor. So okay. I'm not a doctor.
Okay, so then we won't release this interview for a year. Oh, I'm making around. No, that's fine.
For
that's
6 fine. Months then.
No, you corrected us. That's fine. So I will just call you Bernard then. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. So let's talk about this study. Please first explain the design of the study. And what the desired endpoints were.
Okay. Yeah, in this study we investigated if the negative effects of sitting could be compensated with 1 hour of exercise a day. And on the other hand, we also investigated if the negative effects of sitting can be compensated by low-intensity exercise or low intensity physical activity. So So the design of the study was that we included 18 participants, and they had to do three regimes. And one regime was a sitting regime, one regime was an exercise regime, and one a MIPA regime. So a MIPA regime stands for Minimal Intensity Physical Activity Regime. And during the sitting regime, they had to sit for 14 hours a day, so
wow,
a lot. Yeah. In the exercise regime, they also had to sit a lot, 13 hours a day, but they also had to exercise for 1 hour.
And this exercise, this was the short, intense exercise regimen, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was vigorous exercise, so they burned 450 calories by cycling, and they were sitting the rest of the day.
Okay. And then the third group was doing a lower intensity routine?
Yeah, that's right. They had to walk for 4 hours more than the sit and exercise group, and they had to stand for 2 hours more. So actually the difference was that during the sitting and exercise regime, they had similar sitting hours. And during the exercise regime, compared to the minimal intensity physical activity regime, there was comparable energy expenditure, because 1 hour cycling is the same energy expenditure as 4 hour walking and 2 hour standing.
Uh-huh.
But the difference were the sitting hours, so that's important.
So let me see. So 14. So they were actually sitting only 8 hours a day.
Yeah, during the minimal intensity physical activity regime, they were sitting 8 hours a day, indeed. Yeah.
Okay. Now, what did you look at as markers or indicators of health quotient? Were you looking at hormones? Were you looking at body recomposition? What did you look at?
We looked at lipid metabolism parameters and also insulin, glucose, and insulin sensitivity.
Okay.
So actually cardiovascular risk factors.
Okay.
So we showed that after the normal intensity physical activity regime, that non-ADL cholesterol, so the bad cholesterol, it was lower than during sitting and exercise regime. It also triglycerides, apolipoprotein
A,
B, which
okay,
is a,
okay.
Yeah, apolipoprotein B is a marker is a transporter of the bad cholesterol. And also we showed that insulin was also lower during the minimal intensity physical activity regime compared to sitting and exercise regime.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand this. So the lipid metabolism, the insulin indicators, all the cardiovascular risk factors, were lower in the group that walked for 4 hours and stood for 2 hours versus the group that just exercised for 1 hour and sat for 13 hours.
Actually, we saw the difference between the minimal intensity physical activity regime and the sitting regime. And we saw now no difference between the sitting regime and the exercise regime. And when we compared the minimal intensity physical activity regime to the exercise regime, only a significant difference was seen for insulin.
There was a difference in insulin sensitivity in the group that exercised for 1 hour. That's correct, huh?
Yeah, that's correct.
How dramatic was it? Was it statistically significant compared to the subjects that just sat for 14 hours?
Yeah, indeed. So during the minimal intensity physical activity regime, insulin was much lower than during the exercise regime. And it was also statistically significant difference.
Okay, now, so really the only disadvantage to training for 1 hour a day and sitting mm-hmm. for 14 hours a day, which I'm sure a lot of people do when you think about they sit at work for 8 hours a day, they sit in their car or on public transportation for, let's say, an hour a day. Then they come home and sit and eat dinner. Then they sit in front of the television set. So I think that 14 hours a day is probably very realistic. The only downside of the minimal intensity exercise versus the low intensity, longer duration group was the lipid profile then.
Actually, the only difference was the insulin, which we have seen. But we saw also that the exercise regime, it was not better in our study than the sitting regime.
Uh-huh.
And the minimal intensity physical activity regime was better for lipids then. So you have to look at this at that side.
You know, we talk a lot about this on the show. Talk about I tell people, and I do it myself, stand more often. Fine, like if you're at work and you take a phone call, stand up and take the phone call. We've had researchers on the show that have said as a minimum that you should stand 5 or 10 minutes every hour when at work. We talk about people standing during the commercials when watching television. We talk about the importance of activity versus inactivity. So from your research, did the walking for 4 hours have a greater effect, or did the standing for 2 hours have a greater impact on the health benefits?
that's a very good question. I think this will be an issue for our next studies. We think that both are important. So it is important just to not sit. Of course, we think that walking has the most effect, but it might be interesting indeed if you replaced the 4 hours walking with another 4 hours of standing. So you have 6 hours standing. Then you can hypothesize that it might also have good effects with the minimal intensity of physical activity. So that is interesting. Indeed.
I mean, the design of the way you did the study now is would almost say do the same exact study, because you already did this one and you see the gestalt, you see the overall effect already. I would say do the next study, but break up in the longer low intensity group. Break up their sitting session, I mean their standing session, and their exercise session in two separate segments, if you will, so you could see the individual impact of each of these. You already know what the overall impact is. Then when you see the individual impact, then you can say, well, this accounted for 60% of the benefits, this accounted for 40% of the benefits, or 50-50, or 20-30, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, this would be good. Okay.
This is very interesting.
Yeah, let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we've got more questions. We are talking with Bernard Duvivier from Maastricht University in Netherlands. He is not a doctor yet, but he will be soon. So stay tuned. We're going to continue the discussion when we come out of the break.
Money and gain performance and health benefits with Way Natural USA. They are overstocked and having a blowout sale on 2.5 pound jugs of grass-fed whey. This awesome product comes from Amish-fed cows inside the USA. Way Natural USA is cold processed through the patented Chill-Rite method and comes with only 3 ingredients: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Say big. Just click the Way Natural USA banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Get a free sample plus a 15% discount with free shipping coupon product for the first 100 customers. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get
Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
Ladies, it's time to improve your sex drive with the Female Libido Supplement Patch. The patch contains both DHEA and oxytocin hormones, revving up your passionate side and putting you in a relaxing, loving mood. The continuous 8-hour time-release delivery assures that you are ready for that planned or unexpected occasion. Don't wait to enhance your sex drive. Go to superhumanradio.com and click on the banner ad. That's superhumanradio.com and click on the banner ad.
Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, Stimulant-Free Pre-Workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Bernard Du Vivier from Maastricht University in the Netherlands about short duration high intensity workouts versus longer duration lower intensity workouts and standing more often and its effect on health. Okay, so what do you hope that people take away from this? Because Bernard, it's hard enough for people to get to the gym and train for an hour these days with job constraints and so on. I mean, how can we take a prescription away from this and say, okay, if I want optimal health, I know I need to move more, stand more, but how long do I need to exercise? I mean, I can't spend 2 hours at the gym every day. And how frequently? Yeah. First of all, answer that question, then I have another one. Okay.
First of all, I want to emphasize I'm speaking personal name. So not a name of the university. So
okay.
Just to be sure. That's a very good question. I think it is the exercise guidelines are very, very good. They have good evidence based effects on health, many effects on health. But indeed, when you look at studies, you see that 5 to 10% of the American people do follow the guidelines of exercising 30 minutes a day. So actually, in theory, it is very good, but people just don't do it. So what I want people to take from our study is that besides of the exercising, which is very good, you have to have a lot of non-sitting time, a minimum of non-sitting time a day. So it is not only important to be active, but it's also important to be not inactive.
Right.
So I hope that people will stand more hours a day and walk for more hours a day. So walk very, it just has to be slowly. And also what's also important in studies that have been done in the last years, you see that it is also important to break up the sitting time. So indeed, as you already told, try to stand up every hour or try to stand up every hour and just walk for five minutes or stand for a few minutes. I think it's already important for your cardiovascular health. So I hope people will remember that about our study and just get that.
Okay, I got a couple questions I want to ask you. Okay, first of all, the research that you did, was this acute one bout of exercise that you looked at, or did you do this over a period of time?
Yeah, indeed, during the exercise regime, people indeed did 1 hour of exercise. It was one bout of exercise. And besides that, they were able just to walk 1 hour and stand for 1 hour. But during the other regimes, during the minimal intensity physical activity regime, they were able to walk for 4 hours more and stand for 2 hours more, and they were able to do that over all the day. So it was they had no limitations. You have to walk for
It was just one time that they did this. So now, did you how mm-hmm. far out did you look at these parameters of cardiovascular risk factors? Was it an hour after they completed their requirements, or the next morning, mm-hmm. or when did you look at it?
Yeah, that's a good question. They had to do the regime for four days, and after the 4 days, the next morning, so the fifth day actually, they had an oral glucose tolerance test to look at glucose and also insulin metabolism. And they also had to, also blood samples were taken before that, and it was in the fasting state.
So did you just take that one? Did you just take those blood tests? Did you go again? So in other words, on the fifth day you did blood work. On the sixth day, did you do blood work again to see how far out these benefits were affecting these people? How soon they returned back to their, uninfluenced baselines?
No, we didn't do that. I think that will be stuff for next studies.
Yeah, because it would be interesting to find out that if after 4 days of following the whatever program it is, mm-hmm. what the curve is of the effects, whatever they are, whether it's increased risk mm-hmm. factors or decreased risk factors, what the curve is on how long it lasts, because that would then give us, at least we could say, well, look, the beneficial effects of a longer session at the gym and standing more often and working out, it lasts 3 days. So if you get to the gym every third day, you can ride that mm-hmm. wave, that curve, and keep going, as opposed to having to do this every day. That would be more meaningful, because people, in order for them to start this greater dedication, it takes time, obviously, out of their day, I mean.
Yeah, that will be very interesting. Indeed, I think we should do that in next studies. And, ideal, you also want to look at mortality, but then you need bigger studies. That's much more difficult.
We're learning so much about inactivity. It's just amazing. Just plain, pure inactivity. And I've said this on the show, a few mm-hmm. times now, that, 30 years from now, the jobs that will be in great demand are the jobs that no one wants today, the manual labor jobs, because those people will live longer and be healthier. And the jobs that pay greater money, but you have to sit at a desk all day long, those people will be sicker and die sooner. So those jobs will not be the ones that people want any longer.
Yeah, that's interesting. It is indeed true what you are saying. If you look at epidemiological studies, you see that people who are sitting all day on work, just like they in London, they compared bus drivers to people who walk in the bus and look at the tickets. You see that the people who, the bus drivers, they had more mortality and also cardiovascular diseases than the people who are walking bus and looking at tickets. And, so, And the same, you can also see the same for the other,
sedentary jobs. Yeah. Two things are coming out in a lot of research that is going to influence the workforce in the future. The first is the health dangers of shift work. People who are working at night when they should be sleeping, they develop cancer, they develop all sorts of disorders much more readily. We know this now. And now, with the inactivity link to cardiovascular risk factors, and soon they'll be showing mortality rates and so on, employers are going to have to acknowledge these risk factors and compensate workers differently because, you know, jobs that carry a high risk, like, you know, working out on a pipe, on an oil rig in the middle of the ocean, these are high risk jobs. People die all the time. They pay inordinate amounts of money to people, based on their skill, much more than what the skills that they bring, because the job has so much risk involved. And so employers in the near future, because what's going to happen is lawsuits will be filed on behalf of people who develop diseases that have been clearly linked to their job approach, such as sitting all day or working at night. Those lawsuits will then cause employers to have to admit the responsibility of putting people in, offering jobs that carry a greater risk, and they will have to compensate those people differently, I predict.
Yeah, that's also an interesting hypothesis, because inactivity is now acknowledged as the second or third cause of death in the world. All right, so it is an interesting hypothesis. It may get so far, we didn't know.
So the bottom line of your research is you want people to understand that they must pay attention to their level of inactivity and work harder to just be more active, whether that is standing more frequently, walking in work, maybe get up, go to the water fountain more frequently or so on, even though you may get looks from your employer wondering why you get up every half hour. These things are critical for overall health, right?
Yeah, indeed. That's completely true. It's a very good solution and also a very good summary of what I tried to tell.
Are these problems that we have in the United States with the sedentary lifestyle, are they commonplace in the Netherlands and in other countries in the European Union and so on? Do we see this there as well?
You see the same also in the Netherlands. But I must admit, I think in the United States, the problem is just a little bit more greater. You also see more obesity in the United States.
Right.
I think it also has to do with higher inactivity time in the United States. But the same is happening in Europe also.
Do you think that one of the things that the Europeans have on their side is the fact that in the United States, no one walks anywhere. They drive everywhere. And most European communities have been around for hundreds of years, and they are designed so that people can walk to work and walk to the restaurant. And they European people walk more frequently, don't they?
I think so. I don't have good studies about that, but I think so, because when I look at here in the Netherlands, people just a lot of people just cycle to work and walk to restaurants, walk in town. So I think it is a difference.
I talked about it a few years ago. We talked about the fact that I said that perhaps the French paradox is not the food that they eat, but the fact that they walk to and from the restaurant. And we're learning this now. We did a show a few months ago that showed that standing can affect postprandial blood sugar levels to a greater degree than pharmaceutical interventions. So that right after a meal, stand.
Okay.
So, you know, nice. That might be the real French paradox. Listen, Bernard, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. I think you're doing great work, and we will keep in touch with you so we can have you back on the show, okay?
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, the discussion continues, and now we're going to talk about what is best, resistance training or aerobic training when your goal is exclusively fat loss. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on.
Friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RG Cell Super Stem Cell Support. RG Cell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner. Today.
Have you ever been let down by so-called nitric oxide muscle pump products before? Well, prepare to be shocked. Vengeance is like nothing you've ever tried before. Vengeance leverages several different scientifically proven technologies to deliver what some users say are painfully explosive pumps. If you are satisfied with nitric oxide products that make you wonder if they're working, move on. But if you want a muscle pump that you'll not only feel, but others will see, train with a vengeance. Go to xfmuscle.com today and get Vengeance.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetic Cream on my shoulders and in minutes I could feel the pain go away. Not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetic Cream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to altrientc.com. That's altrientc.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to altrientc.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C, 21st Century Vitamin C.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. And the discussion continues. As we will now, we're joined by Dr. Leslie Willis and Dr. Chris Slentz from Duke University. How are you two doing?
Excellent.
Good, thank you.
We're going to be talking about aerobic exercise versus weight training, and actually a combination of the two, and the effects on weight loss and fat loss. Let's do this first and foremost. Let's start out by describing how the study was designed. So the audience can get a feel for that. And please be as technical as you care to be. We have a lot of clinicians that listen to the show as well.
Okay. Well, essentially what we were doing is we were taking sedentary, overweight folks between the ages of 18 and 70, and we were putting them into one of three exercise groups. One group did similar to what the U.S. guidelines would say from a moderate amount of exercise, close to 150 minutes a week of just cardiovascular exercise. One group did resistance training only. This was all machine weights. We did eight different exercises, upper and lower body, three sets, three times a week. And then we had a group that did literally the combination of those two groups put together. And we were looking at several variables, and in this particular publication, we're talking about how each of these groups affected body mass, fat mass, and lean body mass as well.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, so how many people participated? And it's also important to note that these individuals were tested and classified as non-diabetic, correct?
Absolutely. That is a very, very important point here. In order to qualify for this study, you could not be diabetic. Now, we randomized 196 people into this study. However, this actual paper reports, I believe it's 119 of those for various reasons. So what you and I would be talking about related to this paper is on 119 people.
How long were they required to perform their selected modality of activity?
The intervention period was 8 months long. Now, the first 6 to 8 weeks, depending on their group assignment and their fitness coming in, was what we call our ramp period, where we slowly add, in particular in the cardio groups, add minutes to their exercise to prevent injury from going too hard too fast. But the full amount was for at least 6 months, but total it was an 8 month period.
Did you use VO2 max or one rep maximums as a prescription for how hard they would be working?
Well, we used VO2 max for the aerobic group, and we had them set at 75% of their max. For the resistance training, what we do is we did not use one RMs. What we did was we just have them lift as much weight as they could the first week, one set only. For the first 2 weeks, in fact, and it took them a while, but they finally got to a certain amount of weight that they could lift with good form for 12 reps. If they could lift more than that, then Leslie would tell them to increase their weights. And so they got to the appropriate amount of weight for them to lift, but we didn't use a 1RM type of a formula, which I know some people do.
Okay, and this question again to Dr. Slentz. Did you look at anything in the area of hormonal milieus as a response to these exercise modalities, both pre and post the period of time?
Well, we do look at a lot of different things, and one of the things specifically related to hormones is insulin sensitivity. We did something called a frequently sampled intravenous glucose tolerance test. We have not reported the data from that yet, but I'm happy to share it anyway because it's going to be a while, unfortunately, before we actually get it published. But the results show that there wasn't a big effect of resistance training or aerobic training on insulin sensitivity as measured by the intravenous glucose tolerance test. But when they were combined together, we had a pretty sizable response. And so one of the reasons we haven't published it yet is because you normally don't expect 0 plus 0 to equal 3.
Right, but that's exactly.
That's kind of what happened. And so we're a little bit confused about that, especially because in our last study where we did the same kind of aerobic exercise, we had about a 40% increase in insulin sensitivity in the same aerobic training group. We had a bigger change in insulin sensitivity with a higher amount of exercise or with the same amount of exercise, moderate intensity.
Yeah.
But in this study, we didn't see that yet, and we don't exactly know why.
You know, my audience embraces physical culture. We all train, and we probably train quite a bit more than the average American who trains. And I would say, first of all, that 150 minutes a week is really not a lot of training. And the intensity really is where the rubber meets the road in insulin sensitivity, at least in muscle So that might be part of the reason. But still, I think it's interesting that even with that, in the face of that, when you combine the two, you did get the results because you know you're working in both an aerobic and anaerobic threshold area there. I think the group that did the combo, did they do cardio before, cardio after, cardio intermittently throughout the resistance training session? Let's turn this back over to Dr. Willis.
So they 100% of the time did their cardiovascular exercise before the resistance training, and most of that's because we manage our intensity via heart rate monitors, and we couldn't have their heart rate already elevated before they ever got on the treadmill.
Sure.
So, yeah, it was always cardiovascular first, followed by resistance.
Yeah, and there's a lot of evidence that that method of training elicits a greater response in both anabolic hormones and pathways like mTOR and a greater degree of hypertrophy. We've talked about that on the show. The first discussion was probably about 3 or 4 months ago. We had a scientist who's working on behalf of NASA because obviously in zero gravity, sarcopenia is a big issue, and they're trying to find the most efficient ways to get astronauts, although I don't think we have astronauts anymore thanks to the new budget cuts. But anyway, that was a wasted study. But anyway, to get them to build muscle in space, and what they found out was when you do a form of cardio or aerobic training with the specific targeted muscle groups, and probably has something to do with depleted glycogen levels, then do the resistance training, the end response is a greater degree of protein synthesis and muscle gains. So I have a feeling that that might be where some of the magic is in the combo group. But again, I am not accredited for anything other than to talk on this show here, so that's just my guess.
Well, you clearly read a lot, and you know a lot, so I don't think you necessarily need to have degrees to learn and read all that stuff. You're doing great.
Thank you. Okay, so let's talk about things like BMI, fat loss, and lean body mass effects of these different groups. How did it differ?
Well, if you look first off at, I guess we didn't really examine BMI for this particular paper, but we did look at weight, fat mass, and lean body mass and split it up that way. Weight change really only occurred in the cardio and the combo group. There was no statistically significant change in the resistance training group. And so when you look at the weight change for the combo group, it's pretty much driven all by the cardio component of it. And then if you break that down into fat mass and lean mass, well, lean mass acts the way that you would expect it to. You do resistance training, you're going to increase your lean mass, and the same thing happened in the combo group. There was no change in lean mass with the cardio-only group. And then for fat mass, again, driven completely by the cardiovascular component of the study, there were significant changes and significantly better than resistance training for the cardio only and the combo group.
Dietary influences here. Were these individuals instructed to continue to eat the way they normally do? And if so, did they keep diaries? Did you see an attempt to correct energy expenditure by eating more?
Well, we did specifically ask them not to change their diet. They were instructed that way, and periodically throughout the study, they were called by our nutrition staff and completed 24-hour food recalls, and we showed that there was really no change in the food intake throughout the course of the study for any of the groups.
These were both men and women, correct?
Oh, yes, correct.
Okay. Appetite was discussed during the first hour of today's show, and how different types of aerobic training, walking versus running, affects appetite accumulation and hormones related to appetite in women specifically. We just did that during the first hour of today's show. Did you see or did you even monitor any indication about appetite, satiety in this group, and did it differ between men and women?
No, we didn't see any any change in their food intake, and we didn't, I mean, I don't know that I can speak to their appetite, but what they actually took in was not changed, and it didn't appear to be different. We don't have any data that would say it's any different
for them. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to take a commercial break. When we come back, I've got lots more questions. This is a very, very intriguing discussion. We are talking right now with Dr. Leslie Willis and Dr. Chris Slentz from Duke University about the effects of aerobic training, resistance training, and a combination of the two on overall weight loss and fat loss. And we'll continue the discussion when we come out of the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechanogrowth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Guys and gals, are you over 30 with a poor sex drive, gaining unwanted fat, or feel weak or tired? You may be suffering from hormone imbalances that can be treated affordably by physician-supervised hormone therapy. Why wait to feel like you again? Call Core Medical Group now to schedule your hormone check and save $100 when you mention Superhuman Radio. Call 617-869-7961. That's 617-869-7961. Physical and medical history required prior to therapy. Some restrictions apply. Call for details, 617-869-7961. Feel like you again.
Are you in the midst of cutting body fat? Feel exhausted when it's time to train but don't want to use pre-workout drinks because they're loaded with sugar and carbs? Ice V2 is here to help you get intense while carbohydrate depleted. Ice V2 has only 1 gram of non-sugar carbs per serving. Ice V2 is loaded with strength amplifying anabolic activators that will make your workouts more productive while allowing you to cut the fat. Cut the fat. Loaded with amino acids, Ice V2 contains the unique Formel Norvaline that acts as a pump amplifier. Get Ice V2 today at xfmuscle.com.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Save money and gain performance and health benefits with Way Natural USA. They are overstocked and having a blowout sale on 2.5 pound jugs of grass-fed whey. This awesome product comes from Amish-fed cows inside the USA. Way Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite method and comes with only 3 ingredients, grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Save big. Just click the Way Natural USA banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Get a free sample plus a 15% discount with free shipping coupon product for the first 100 customers.
This time of year, it seems everyone's sick. You need to do everything you can to avoid it. A healthy immune system starts with a healthy lifestyle. This includes Altrient C. Altrient C delivers the vitamin C your body needs. In fact, Altrient delivers 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. Go to AltrientC.com. That's AltrientC.com. It even comes with a money-back guarantee. For vitamin C that actually gets absorbed, go to AltrientC.com or call 888-437-6353 to order. That's 888-437-6353. Altrient C, 21st Century Vitamin C.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Leslie Willis and Dr. Chris Slentz from the prestigious Duke University. We're talking about their research into different modalities of exercise and its effect on weight loss and fat loss. Okay. So, looking at these three groups, who lost the most body fat but gained the most amount of muscle? That's where the magic is, in my opinion. Whoever wants to answer that, jump in.
I'll answer it. Yes, the only you would have to say that the combination group in that case, there was no difference in the weight loss between the combination and the cardio-only group, but there was a difference in their change in lean body mass. So all total, you would say the combo group would have benefited the most.
And see, and I have a feeling that I'm going to be preaching to the choir here. However, when this study was first published, I want to say it was in December, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. You know, the media ran with the sound bite, you know, cardio, if you want to lose weight and you want to lose fat, cardio is the answer. And something that I have been complaining about on this show for probably almost the entire 8 years that I've been on the air now is that the majority of the medical orthodoxy did not realize the value, the importance, the metabolic currency that is muscle, is lean body mass. And whenever we talk about body recomposition, when I say we, whenever we hear about it on mainstream venues, we're always hearing about so-and-so lost 150 pounds, so-and-so lost, 80 pounds, so-and-so lost 40 pounds, but very few people are looking at the effect on lean body mass and obviously the loss of body fat. And my objective is to continue to bang this drum to say to practitioners and clinicians everywhere, weight loss in a vacuum is not a good thing. Look at someone dying of cancer. I don't want that kind of weight loss, okay? What I want is I want a repartitioning. I want to increase lean body mass because this is something that burns calories. This is something that increases metabolic efficiency. This is something that increases strength, which is critical to the journey because you don't want to be 70 years old and not being able to get out of a chair any longer. But I want to lose body fat, and I'm not a proponent of everybody needs to be under 10% body fat. I think that is just as dangerous as the group that is, carrying 30, 40, 50% body fat. But nonetheless, to me, the magic in this research is the combo group. Am I off base there, Dr. Slentz?
Well, so it's good you bring this up. This is something that we talk about a lot and think about a lot, as you can imagine, since we spend our lives doing research in this. So we start out with the simple questions, and that is what effects do you get with aerobic exercise and what effects do you get with resistance training? So the novel part of this study isn't that resistance training leads to lean body mass gains. Everybody who does a decent resistance training stimulus finds that to be true. But the question we thought might be of most interest, because of the types of people we deal with, we're not dealing with the type of people in your audience who do lots of exercise and think you should spend lots of time on exercise. We're dealing with people who are sedentary and don't like to exercise or haven't found the time to exercise. So if they come to us and they're 40 or 50 years old, and they're overweight and overfat, but not necessarily too weak to do what they need to be able to do, the question they might be interested in asking is, what should I do? What's the most important thing for me to do if I want to lose fat?
Mm-hmm.
And when you diet, by the way, and you lose weight, some of it's fat and some of it's lean
right.
body mass. So you're
right.
exactly right about that.
Right.
But if you want to know the very best thing to do for fat loss or weight loss, if that's your main problem or main question, then we think the research here shows that aerobic exercise is the better answer to that. We already know if you want to do weight training, if you want to gain strength, if you want to gain lean body mass, weight training is clearly the answer. Aerobic exercise doesn't seem to touch lean body mass. So if you want to we've almost always used our questions to answer the exercise studies we do are designed to answer questions and not necessarily what's the best for you, but what's the best for you if you want to gain lean body mass? The answer is resistance. What's the best if you want to get strength? The answer is resistance. What's the best if you want to lose fat or lose weight? Aerobic is the best. We also looked at metabolic health, and it appears that most of the time in non-diabetics, and that's why Leslie picked up on your point about diabetics versus non-diabetics, most of the time in non-diabetics, aerobic seems to have more health benefits,
mm-hmm.
metabolic benefits. In diabetics, we've seen a number of studies where resistance
yeah.
training helped with glucose tolerance and insulin sensitivity. Leslie wants to say something.
I just wanted to point out that you bring up a great point about the benefits of the combo group, but in order to achieve these benefits, they did double the time commitment that the cardio-only group did. And so I think that one of the main things that, you were seeing back in December, you know, of course, whenever we do these interviews, there's a tagline that somebody's going to pick up on and run with as the title. But I do think that we would say that, aerobic only seems to be the more time-efficient manner of losing fat. And that's one thing that, Dr. Slins here is getting at is that, you know, our participants are only going to give us a limited amount of time. And what can we do with that time to get the most bang for our buck?
And I understand this. I really do. Getting people to understand the value of physical activity, as we've talked about earlier in the show, just the fact of standing more often and its effect on cardiovascular risk factors, something so simple for people to do. Stand during the commercials. Stand at work when you take phone calls. Stand more often and reduce your cardiovascular risk factors. So I understand this. It's hard to get people to do what is necessary to promote health and longevity.
Exactly.
I get that. And so you're tasked with, okay, so how do we find the sweet spot where they don't have to put in too much time, but they can get some real good benefits out of it. But my, but my frustration is this. This is my, and again, please, I am not directing this. I understand. I think you did marvelous work here. I think this is important discussion and I think it's, I applaud you. But my frustration is this. Probably in the, 1700s, to become a doctor, I don't even know if allopathic medicine was available then, but whatever it was, I don't think you needed the training that the two of you needed to get to be a doctor. And so the argument that people have today who are part of the obese faction in this nation, which is so dangerous right now, is, well, you know, we just don't have the time. That would be like you going to the registrar when you went to school and saying, look, you know, I don't have the time to put all this time in to become a doctor. I want to do what they did back in the 1700s. Just give me a couple books. I'll go home, take a test, and make me a doctor. And they would say to you, I'm sorry. The standards of practice and the standards of care have changed. We know now that you need all this anatomy and physiology and pharmacology and blah, blah, blah. And so you go, well, I guess I want to be a doctor. I'm going to put the time in. And my message to people is if you want to be healthy, you can't go, I want it to be convenient too. You got to do what you have to do. That's it. End of story. And again,
we agree.
And I know you do. I'm venting here. And I think that when people are looking for losing weight in a vacuum, it becomes a very, very dangerous, notion. You just have to look at the number of women who go on the HCG diet, eat 600 calories a day, feel that they've lost 25 pounds in 25 days, and they've done great things, and they boomerang back because their metabolic set, their metabolic needs have dropped because they've lost 40 to 50% of that in muscle. And then when they even eat meagerly, they get fatter than they were before. This is disastrous. And so,
We're not diet fans. I imagine you know that.
What's that?
Because of that. We're not diet fans because of the problem of diet, and although it has great short-term results, it often has, like you said, some negative side effects for the long term.
Yes, yes. But I do agree with you that if somebody is exclusively looking to jumpstart, and I also understand the mindset, being a former over 330-pound individual, I also understand the mindset of progress begets more progress. And if you don't see that you're losing weight, you lose faith and you say, I can't do this. And that person may be enlisted by your message. And hopefully at some point in the journey go, I've lost a lot of body fat. I don't like the way my body looks. I think I need to add some muscle now. And they take that, they go from 101 to 201. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I agree. Did you use DEXA scans to evaluate the lean body mass?
No, we actually use the BodPod machine, which measures air displacement, similar to the hydrostatic kind of old standard way of water displacement.
Except you don't have to hold your breath.
Yeah, it's a lot more exactly. User friendly, and it's a lot faster process.
Yeah.
But no, we did not use DEXAs here.
I was just curious if the cardio only group had any change in lean body mass.
Not statistically significant.
Well, then that's good. Then that's good. Then I would have to say to the person who's non-diabetic and obese and they want to jumpstart their program, then spend more time doing cardio at the onset. That's good. Great research. Are you working on anything new?
Yeah, we're in the present. We're near the end of our current study. It says in pre-diabetics, because we found diabetes and pre-diabetes interesting, that diabetics are on a lot of drugs, and so we get pre-diabetics before they're on all those drugs. And we're looking at different intensities of exercise and different amounts of exercise, and also the DPP intervention, the diet prevention program, diet plus exercise. And we're looking at lots of different health-related variables, and we haven't published those yet, so we can't talk about them.
No,
too much,
that's fine.
That's what we're doing.
Any interest in looking at the timing of exercise? Only because we have research now that shows that postprandial blood sugar levels are affected dramatically by just simply by standing after a meal. And those of us who are in performance athletics know that the meal that you have after a heavy training session, whatever that be, heavy meaning intense training session, the repartitioning effects are different. Those substrates end up promoting more muscle gains and more fat loss. Any of that going to be looked at all?
We don't look at that, but I like to read research in that area. It's a very interesting area, as you just said. Where does all the food go when you've just finished doing a resistance training versus where does it go if you did aerobic, and how is it different depending on whether you do it in the morning or evening? Those are all pretty interesting questions, and especially a lot of the exercise benefits are insulin sensitivity. They're fairly acute, lasting ones, and so we do find those kinds of questions of interest. We're currently not looking at those ourselves, but we certainly read the research in those areas.
And now we know that insulin is diurnal. I mean, the insulin sensitivity seems to be diurnal. Fat cells differ in the morning and the evening as far as their insulin sensitivity goes, and so there's a lot of in the athletic world now that are now postponing their carbohydrate consumption in their training sessions to later in the evening, which to me, from a health standpoint, is not a good idea because you don't sleep as well. But they are doing this because there's some evidence that fat cells tend to turn down their insulin sensitivity, so there's a higher degree of the nutrients taken in, including obviously the carbohydrates, going to glycogen resynthesis. So, I mean, it's really intriguing. The whole thing is intriguing, and it just keeps unfolding more and more. But yeah, no, this is great stuff. I'm really happy that you guys did this study, and I thank you very much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
You too.
Hi. Right, so there you have it. I think that was a great show today. I don't know. Maybe you don't think so. I want to thank all my guests today. Go through the list real quick. I want to thank Dr. Annette Larson-Mayer from University of Wyoming at Laramie. I want to thank, of course, Bernard Duvivier from Maastricht University in the Netherlands for being on the show today. And, of course, I want to thank Dr. Leslie Willis and Dr. Chris Slentz. The whole show is a unique tapestry of information about weight loss, satiety, muscle creation, and so on. I think this single show traverses three intertwining topics that should give people a greater feel for how they want to train if health or fat loss is exclusively your goal. And obviously, if muscle creation is your goal, then the combo approach seems to be it. Okay, thank you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading...